Hi, and welcome to the Nat Decants podcast. I'm your wine-soaked host, Natalie McLean. Now here's a topic to start a pub brawl. Is wine better than beer? Well, you know my bias, but I had fun with this topic. So bring on the beer advocates. Provoking debate is the writer's job when not drinking. But before we get to that story, I'd like to tell you about this week's delicious recipe for Wellington Wild Mushroom Fricassee that comes from Chef Michael Sullivan, the chef owner of the Merrill Inn in Prince Edward County. It's a lovely place to stay when vacationing in this scenic and emerging wine region that also features the famous Sandbanks National Park. Michael's cooking is spectacular and worth the trip. The Merrill Inn restaurant recently received a Wine Spectator Award for its wine list. I'd pair this tasty dish with the 2005 Dr. Fischer Riesling Cabernet from Germany or the 2005 Errázuriz Wild Ferment Pinot Noir from Chile from this week's wine picks that you'll find on my website at nataliemclean.com. You can also search for more recipes on the site for hors d'oeuvres, appetizers, entrees, breads, and desserts. And if you'd like to submit recipes to be featured in this podcast and in the newsletter with credits to you and your company, please email me at natdecants@nataliemclean.com. We have two wine words to mention this week. The first word is plump. A plump wine has low acidity but tastes full and rich due to lots of fruit flavors and glycerin, a sugar alcohol that gives wine body. A plump wine is often delicious, though it may not age well due to its low acidity. And when there's too little acidity, the wine is criticized for being flabby, as equally unattractive in wine as it is on thighs and underarms. The second word is pungent. This is a wine that has strong aromas that are often out of balance with others in its bouquet. Often pungent wines are intensely sour, astringent or grating on the palate, much like the dinner guest whose voice is too loud and whose opinions are tiresome. You can find more definitions in my wine glossary on the website. And the question of the week is, how do you open a bottle of champagne without taking out the vase on the mantel or your eye? First, ensure the wine is well chilled before opening it. 20 minutes in ice water works best, but an hour in the fridge will do too. Next, ignore those Indy 500 winners. Shaking the bottle before opening it increases the pressure inside the bottle, which is already equal to 90 pounds per square inch, or roughly the equivalent of the pressure inside city bus tires. Very scary. Remove the foil and wire casing from the top. Some people like to drape a small towel over the cork for greater grip, especially if the bottle is damp with condensation and therefore slippery. To open, keep one hand firmly on the cork, or on the towel on the cork, while using the other to slowly turn the bottle. No cork screws are needed since it's the bottle rather than the cork that's turned to open the bottle. The pressure inside the bottle will start to help you push the cork out. The cork should come out with a sigh rather than a pop. Serve champagne in or sparkling wine in a flute, which is a long, narrow glass, rather than those broad-brimmed wine goblets to better preserve the fizz and concentrate the aromas. Although I can't answer all of the emails I receive, several hundred a day, people, I try to answer as many of them as I can in the Frequently Asked Questions section of my website. In my new book, Red, White, and Drunk All Over, I also tackle many of the aspects of wine from grape to glass, how wine is made, marketed, matched with food, consumed, and cellared. I do this through storytelling, taking my readers behind the scenes of the international wine world, visiting its most evocative places, and sharing adventures with its most colorful, obsessed, and hilarious personalities. If you'd like to find out more, you can read the media or reader reviews of the book at nataliemclean.com. And did I mention that the book makes an excellent gift along with a good bottle for weddings, anniversaries, graduations, birthdays, Father's Day, Mother's Day? If you've got an occasion, I've got the book. End of commercial. As usual, if you'd like to find out more about upcoming wine events, wines to buy, other newsy bits and gossip that are part of my free e-newsletter, you can sign up for it at nataliemaclean.com. And if you have any comments or suggestions, just send me an email. And now, sit back, pour yourself a glass of something, and enjoy this week's story entitled, Beer is What Ails Me. The fact that wine is infinitely better than beer is obvious to those of us who drink it. But apparently, beer drinkers need this explained to them. Did I mention that the health benefits of wine include cognitive ones? Beer is the fuel for hockey brawls, an inspiration for buxom babe commercials, and a source of enduring flatulence. By contrast, wine partners with haute cuisine and fine restaurants, is served at Tony Gallery openings, and toasts special occasions from birthdays to marriages. Omar Khayyam's lyrical poem describes paradise as, quote, a jug of wine, a loaf of bread, and thou, end of quotes. No mention of a six-pack there. The knowledge of wine's superiority has finally made itself clear to most Americans. Studies now show that wine has now surpassed beer as the most frequently consumed tipple. Back in 1992, a Gallup poll found that 47% of drinkers usually drank beer and only 27% wine. A similar poll in 2005 found that beer had nosed ahead of, or found that wine had nosed ahead of beer, 39% versus 36%. The future looks even brighter, according to the research company International Wine and Spirit Record. It predicts that America will become the largest wine-consuming country in the world by 2009. France, the traditional leader, will fall to third place, with Italy hanging on at number two. The heart of this liquid matter is that wine doesn't just taste better than beer, but it also has a greater range of flavors. Oh, sure, you can talk about your craft ales and your artisanal brews, but most beer is marketed like breakfast cereal. And it's made from essentially the same grains, barley and wheat. Wine, though, can be made from thousands of grapes, blends, styles, and methods by dozens of countries divided into subregions and appellations. This results in aromas that range from wet violets to toasty oak and evolve as wine ages. Anyone caught swirling and sniffing their beer stein would be laughed out of a pub. Worldwide, there are more than a million wineries, and most don't even have a 1% share of the U.S. market. The beer category is much more concentrated. The top 10 light brands own more than 95% of the market. Even the beer companies recognize the profit potential of wine as a more differentiated and faster-growing product. In 2005, for example, Australian beer giant Foster's Brewing bought the wine group Southcore and its brands such as Beringer, Penfolds, and Wolf Blass. Some people try to tell me that beer is the democratic drink of every man, and to this I simply say, tosh, poppycock. That's just reverse snobbery, and a transparent attempt to bolster the image of a drink that just doesn't measure up. Like the cooperation awards they used to give everyone in kindergarten. And while we're at it, let's explode the tired myth of the old wine snob. This bowtied breed now exists mostly in our imaginations, along with the crusty old sommelier. These days, you're more likely to be served by a 20-something wine gal or dude. Wine's greater accessibility today is even reflected in its packaging with Tetra Paks, screw caps, and all those cute critter labels. Would you like a fluffy squirrel? Or a cuddly kangaroo. There's a good reason why there are so many wine clubs, wine courses, wine country vacation planners, and wine writers. Wine is bottled poetry. Beer is a canned cliche. Well, that's it for this week. Better have a second glass. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let others know about them. And you can find out more information about my book, Red, White, and Drunk All Over, and my free e-newsletter at nataliemaclean.com. Tune in again in another 2 weeks for another exciting episode. In the meantime, drink up. Cheers, Natalie. This podcast and its content are under copyright to Natalie McLean, 2007.